Hello and welcome to The Stack. On this week's show, we celebrate homes, chatting with the editor-in-chief of iconic title Architecture Digest. We also speak with the founder of Good Trouble, a title celebrating the culture of resistance. And we welcome back the editor of Dog Magazine to discuss indie publishing in the COVID-19 era, and dogs, of course. Stay tuned for this week's edition of The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up on the show, I speak with Roderick Stanley from Good Trouble and Julian Victoria from Dog Magazine. But first, we're staying in our homes more than ever, so it makes sense to speak with the editor of a magazine that is all about beautiful homes. I spoke to Amy Astley, editor-in-chief of Architecture Digest. Among other things, we discuss how it is to make a magazine under COVID-19 and how AD's content is being shaped by it. Here is Amy.
AD is 100 years old, and this is our anniversary year, 2020. We were founded in 1920. So I've been thinking deeply about home all year, and we did an incredible book that I think I may have spoken about last time I was on your podcast. And, you know, I have been reflecting deeply on the meaning of home always. I love home, and AD celebrates shelter and all its forms, but it is more meaningful than ever right now, and sort of profoundly so. You know, I think anybody who can, the whole world is sheltering at the same time. So I think that's extraordinary, and it's almost unfathomable what that means. Those of us who have a home are lucky. We know that so many people don't have homes and are shelter insecure and also food insecure. And I think right now the feeling of gratefulness, if you have a home, is a deep, deep one, a deep feeling of gratitude. And we're going to see a big shift in the way people approach home, valuing it more than ever, investing in it. And I think, you know, trying to optimize and maximize their house and improve their house, but also kind of also realize, hey, it's kind of great as it is, I'm lucky, which I think will possibly shift. For me, it's already shifting how I look at certain projects. You know, I'm looking for a little bit of warmth and coziness sometimes more than blingy, blingy, you know?
I totally agree with you, Amy. In fact, I can even say myself, I for some reason, I'm investing in plants. You know, I was never a big plant guy, but for some reason, I'm just connecting again with those.
Especially if you live in the city, having plants in your house is incredible. And if you, yes, I mean, we're talking about window boxes and victory gardens and people who are lucky to have some space. What kind of garden and flowers do they have outside, or can they grow their own food, or just the desire to have light and greenery around you and the feeling of nature and a rebirth, how important that is for your eyes and for your psyche, you know? So yeah, it's a profound moment for the idea of home, and certainly AD for 100 years has been about home, and we will have another 100 years of celebrating it without a doubt on so many new platforms. I mean, AD has grown digitally enormously in the 4 years that I've been here, and it's really gratifying to see how we can share. For example, I'm talking to you about my May cover, which is Drake, and you don't physically have the issue in your hands. It really just dropped yesterday, even though we've been promoting it for a little while digitally, but you can see it all online, and that's incredible. That's a big change.
Well, talking about, I mean, the May issue, I mean, it looks fabulous from the pictures I've seen in his house, and it coincides with his new song that was number one in the US. So right. At the same time, yes, we're looking for cozy, but that's quite a fabulous issue. I think people are also looking for some almost a form of escapism as well, right?
That's right. I mean, we put together the May issue before COVID. We put the finishing touches on it from our homes, but it was already photographed. Drake was already photographed. And in fact, all the stories in the issue were already photographed well before COVID. And then from quarantines or isolation at home, we wrapped up the issue. We shipped the issue. We put the final touches on the copy, and I wrote my editor's letter from home. And then the next issue, which is June, was largely already photographed, but we completely put it together remotely. So now I'm circling back to you actually asked me, how is it putting together a magazine from isolation? And I didn't answer you. I started talking about 100 years, but it is challenging, but it is doable. we work on our computers all day anyway, whether we're in the office, now we're just doing it at home. We're in Zoom meetings all day. Today I have an art meeting. We just share the screen and look at the layouts. And it is definitely possible to function and put the issues together. It's not preferable to being together in person, but it works okay. And then the bigger challenge will be you want to get out and photograph homes again. Fortunately for us, we have a lot of inventory and we shoot very far in advance. So we already had a lot of the projects in-house. So we have great issues coming up and there's no kind of dearth of content. And then our big shooting season kind of starts right about now. We really shoot heavily from May right through to the fall because that's when the weather's better. It's more sunshiny. The skies are less gray. People's gardens are green and flowering. So hopefully COVID will be lifting and we will be back in action with our photo teams shooting all the good stuff that you'll see, you know, over the course of the next year in AD. But yes, we have great content and we weren't really in a horrible position as far as content.
Well, and I think for, you know, people now in lockdown, they're looking for kind of their favorite brands and an iconic brand such as AD. I think people are thinking, I mean, I still want content from them more than ever. And how are you planning to do this? I mean, of course, you have the print issue coming out, which is fabulous. Print is absolutely amazing. But tell us also about your digital channel, Clever. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit more about that.
I mean, our digital channels are on fire. And now they've been growing successfully for quite a long time now. But I have to say, with people in lockdown, they're on fire. This morning, I woke up and looked at our Instagram. It had flipped from 5.6 yesterday to 5.7 million today. And I was doing a little happy cheer because we are the second biggest Instagram in Condé Nast US, just behind Vogue. So, you know, it's gratifying to see that kind of growth, especially on a brand like AD that people used to perceive as older or for older people. Well, actually, it has this incredible digital life with all kinds of people. You can be any age, but it's so successful. Clever is about 2.5 years old now, and we are doing a relaunch this week for Clever because it's so successful that we have learned and we're pivoting a little bit in our content offerings. We're kind of maturing Clever a little bit from what it was when we first launched it. But Clever is really news you can use. It's actionable service. It's practical information. Maybe for a younger user, but I'd say more just for a different sensibility from AD, which AD revolves very much around professionals and, you know, higher budgets, I would say. Clever is more of a sensibility. It could be any age. But we are increasing the wellness and renovation content there, informational guides. The next one coming up is about hardwood flooring, everything you need to know, conversation, which right now would be around ideas about quarantine, cleaning, relationships at home, that kind of thing, and more e-commerce on Clever.
Do you think, I just want to come back to a point you mentioned early in the interview that we might see a little shift about home design as well. Are we going to see a little bit more kind of the cozier vibes instead of just kind of harsh, yeah, concrete or big? Do you feel that, or do you think perhaps nothing's going to change?
Right. Well, it's a great question. I mean, I think that we've been going towards warmer, cozier, layered, and personal for a while now. And we have been showing that in AD really since I started, to be honest. When I started at AD, which was just not quite 4 years ago, I called it like the high hotel look. Everything was beige, neutral, tasteful, boring, generic, you know, non-offensive, but not interesting. So I tried to pivot the magazine quickly when I started into much more personal. But that said, I mean, personal could be high minimalism or it could be high layered and colorful. I like to see, for me, AD should be a really personal expression of someone's taste, whether it's clean or it's busy. You know, speaking of Drake, he has like super opulent taste. You know, it's like a palace in Toronto. That's cool. You know, I want to see something personal that speaks to that homeowner. That's what I think is interesting. But yes, I do think we're going to move into a time where people want to be a little bit more snug at home and a little cozier. Minimalism might feel a little chilly for people, but it will never go away because it's a very valid design concept. Yeah.
And Amy, I'm asking this to all our Stack guests. Has your media diet changed? I mean, are you kind of reading more books or other print magazines, or are you just, I don't know, are you just watching the news on TV, which I have to say, I only watch until 5 p.m. because then I just, it's not healthy.
Well, I read most of my information digitally. I don't actually turn my TV on that much. I have been, occasionally I'll watch Cuomo, who's been great, Governor Cuomo, on the news a little bit, but I actually just listen to him when I'm in my car on the radio, and he's been very soothing. And I'm an avid news hound. I'll be on, I read the New York Times pretty much cover to cover every day, which is a time commitment. But I don't know, for me, a day where I haven't read the New York Times is not a good day. Like, I can't face it, you know. I read it in a combination of on my phone, you know, digitally and in paper, both ways. I can't say I'm reading a lot of books. You know, I'm in a book club. I'm with my friends. I'm supposed to be reading Beloved by Toni Morrison, which I read, you know, years and years ago. It's a great book. But I'm the weak link in the book club, Fernando. I just found I couldn't concentrate on the book. It's very dense, and I wasn't able to lose myself in the book at all. I'm very much in the present right now. I'm trying to run my magazine and my business remotely from home, and I'm basically thinking about AD 24/7 in a good way, because I love it. You know, I'm trying to stay in touch with my team. I talk to advertising clients every day. I talk to the edit team every day, the business team every day. It's pretty all consuming at this time, and we're creating content. You know, the website is kicking, and I told you Clever's relaunching. We've started a new series during this time called AD Visits, which I host. We've put up the second one yesterday. You can see that on our Instagram. It's a Instagram TV show. It's called AD Visits, and it's just sort of hanging out with AD. You know, we have great home tours. We have great design conversations between people sort of from our crew, a guest, and then someone from our staff. And I'm filming that today. It takes 2 hours. So it's a busy time. I'm absolutely as busy as I would be if I was sitting in the World Trade Center in my office, which is a really long-winded way of saying I feel really guilty I'm not reading books. Yeah, because I know everybody's like reading, you know, War and Peace during their quarantine. I'm not. I did finish Margaret Atwood's book, The Testaments, which is the sequel to Handmaid's Tale.
I've got to be honest, as a fan of the magazine, I'm glad you're not reading it and you're dedicating your time to AD, because I think people will consume more than ever in print, in digital, or whatever it is. You're doing a service.
We're really, really busy, and we have a big website. We have a lot of traffic on the website. We have a big Instagram. We have a big magazine. It's a lot of work to keep on top of the whole machine, you know?
That was Amy Astley there, Editor-in-Chief of Architecture Digest. And now we welcome back on the stack Roderick Stanley, the founder of Good Trouble, a title that looks like a broadsheet and looks at the art and culture of protest. I spoke to Roderick about their latest issue, which focuses on climate change.
You know, I guess like everyone at the moment, we're figuring it out as we go along. As happenstance would have it, we launched this issue. It's roughly 18 months, a year and a half after the second issue. And it came out very, like, right at the end of February, I think, maybe even early March. So really kind of just before, you know, the whole world changed and we entered this kind of lockdown situation. So, you know, what kind of, as the world kind of went from normality to this kind of new normal where most of us are existing in over these last few weeks or month more, you know, we've had to sort of figure it out. So, you know, the magazine got out there. Well, you know, we had plans for events and talks and all sorts of stuff that obviously has gone out the window. And we're lucky to have a distributor who helps us to get Good Trouble into bookstores in the UK and Europe. We've been self-distributing this to stores in North America. So we've just gone through the process of getting magazines shipped out to all these bookstores before, obviously, they've all had to close. But I know some are operating online and some, you know, who knows what's happening with some of those. So we're trying to figure it out. Obviously, we spent a few weeks just personally just kind of going into survival mode, I guess, just trying to sort of work out what we're doing, how we're going to live, schools closing and all the rest of it. So it's only really in the last few weeks that we've, I guess, we put Good Trouble into what I've called lockdown mode and switched to a kind of very sort of digital focused presence. I sort of upped the frequency of the newsletter from monthly to weekly, and I've changed what the newsletter is about and tried to use it more as a sort of link to resources, articles, information, particularly kind of related to the pandemic crisis, but also through, you know, this kind of lens of arts and activism that we look at everything with, and also using the stories from the issue and posting those up on the website to kind of help drive everything along. And I guess, you know, beyond that, what this kind of lockdown mode looks like, I don't know, we're all kind of, you know, figuring it out, but that's kind of where it's at the moment, I guess, kind of taking the magazine and recognizing that the things we wanted to do with this issue aren't going to happen. So what are the other things that we can do to, you know, hopefully get it in front of people and, you know, to be useful and entertaining while we do it?
As a reader, I must say, Rod, I'm very curious about Good Trouble's approach about, you know, our current situation and how this will affect activism as well. Do you think perhaps, you know, people are at home, do you think they will think more about some of the issues, even mentioning the latest issue like climate change, for example?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I mean, it happens that this issue is very focused on climate change because, you know, it's the third issue we did. And like I say, it's, you know, it follows about a year and a half on from the other one. And each of the issues has evolved slightly. The first issue was very much at the end of 2016, early 2017. And it was very focused on, you know, the election of Trump in the US and also the Brexit referendum in the UK. And the second issue was about a year later. And, it, you know, it took a much wider remit looking at arts and activism in general. And I think I was conscious with that issue that I wanted to do more around the climate crisis, but it's not always the easiest issue or topic to kind of tackle. So I kind of put a, you know, a mental note to look at that more with the third issue. And then as, you know, as 2019 rolled around, I feel strange, like looking back from within this kind of pandemic moment, because it's, you know, like everyone's talked about, it does such weird things to time, you know, like even just a month ago seems like a different, seems like a year ago.
Yes.
But looking back to 2019, you know, there were a lot of things happening around the climate crisis. You had, you know, Greta Thunberg and the school strike movement, you know, it had Extinction Rebellion arriving on the scene and kind of announcing a bit of a return to, well, announcing a return to direct action. And one of the interviews I did in the issue with Bill McKibben, who was the founder of 350.org, the environmental grassroots pressure group, we talked about how, you know, we're now in this time that scientists have been warning us about for a long time, that we're starting to see the effects of climate change. You're starting to see them and experience them. And that's whether that's wildfires, you know, heat waves, droughts. And, you know, we saw a lot of that kind of playing out throughout 2019. So it just felt that this would be, you know, the right issue to focus on for this issue of the magazine. So, you know, that's why we did it. And, you know, and then obviously this whole sort of pandemic situation, the outbreak, the coronavirus outbreak has happened. And, you know, everyone's dealing with it in their own ways and as best we can. But I mean, to go to your question of, you know, what does that, you know, how does that affect activism in general? Well, I think it's interesting with regard to the climate crisis, you know, and we're talking today on the 50th anniversary of Earth Day as well, that, you know, like I mentioned, there's been this kind of period of sort of survival mode, a kind of sort of shock, I guess, that everyone was kind of focused on and sort of looking after themselves, their families, those nearest to them. And then, you know, from what I've seen, that quickly evolved into, certainly in Brooklyn, New York, and, you know, from what I can tell in the UK and in Europe and other places, that quickly grew up into these sort of systems of mutual aid and support and people reaching out into their apartment blocks and streets and neighborhoods, you know, helping the elderly and the vulnerable. I guess in some cases, building on existing networks, you know, in some cases, putting into place networks that didn't exist, but have, you know, that would now need to. So I sort of think we're kind of seeing this sort of quick evolution because of, you know, the situation that we're in. And, you know, mentioned Earth Day today, we're also, you know, there's a focus around what can be done. And obviously there were a lot of plans around Earth Day for protests and marches and direct action and all the rest of it. Now, a lot of that has, you know, it's all had to shift online. So what does this kind of digital activism look like? And, you know, there's still a lot of room for, you know, traditional on the ground activism at the moment. There was last week, the Reverend Billy, who you may or may not be familiar with, we featured him in Good Trouble a couple of times. He was arrested in Central Park, where they've built this field hospital for some of the patients that aren't room for in the hospitals. And he was arrested for planting a rainbow flag in protest at the religious group, who are a notoriously anti-gay religious group who have built the field hospital, which I wasn't aware of. So, you know, there's pictures of him out there being arrested by the New York police. So I think there's a lot of different ways it go, that this can go. And I think that's the big question of, like, where does it go from here? There was a meme that someone sent me. I'm sorry, the internet's broken my brain. I guess I can only kind of think in memes now, but I don't know if you've seen it. It's a picture of someone swimming and there's a shark behind it, which is labeled COVID-19. And then there's a bigger shark swimming behind that, which is labeled the upcoming economic crash. And then there's this enormous shark behind it, which is labeled climate crisis. And I think that kind of, you know, that sort of shows what's coming down the line for us, that, you know, we can't, you know, what's next? We can't go back to normal. You know, we have to think, what do we want to change from here? And I guess if there's any positives to come out of this, it'll be looking at what we change when we get back to life as quote unquote normal. You know, can we create a better normal?
That was Roderick Stanley there from Good Trouble magazine. And finally on the show, it's time to look at the effect of COVID-19 in indie publishing. For that, I spoke to one of our favorite titles, Dog Magazine, and their editor, Julian Victoria. We spoke about some of those challenges and, of course, about dogs as well.
It has postponed things. You know, we were supposed to publish issue 7 by early June. So we had to postpone that until September, which is a date that we are working with. We don't even know if September is going to be doable because we don't know how long we're able to, you know, travel, for example. Just because our magazine is so, it requires a lot of gathering with people, you know, photography, you know, interviews, travel. So we can't do anything right now because of that. You know, like, we can't produce a magazine because we don't have the content that we need. We're doing a little things for the magazine for issue 7, like we have some nonfiction stories, so we're working on those, you know, we illustrating those pieces, but those are very limited things. They're like 2 or 3 stories out of, you know, a bunch of ones that we have. So we're trying to see how we can plan ahead for the September issue, which is supposed to be in June, but now it's going to be September.
But at the same time, you know, I was telling before, I think Dog, it's such a beautiful read, you know, during this period as well. I mean, you had, you know, some back issues as well. Did you get any interest from readers or even new readers who say, you know what, maybe that's the time to buy Dog? And I guess you can buy the older issues.
Yes, they can buy it. The promo is we are almost sold out, so we don't have much to sell. There's a whole thing about not able to produce a new magazine is because, you know, we need to produce a magazine to make money, basically. But we can't do it right now. So whatever we have on the website are very limited numbers of issues that we have. And I'm trying to talk to, you know, distributors or retail stores that might have back issues that they can give it to us so we can put it on the website. But we need to come up with a new issue for us to make money, just because we don't even have advertisers on our magazine. So other magazines will have that backup. You know, we are so dependent on sales with like other independent magazines. So for us, it's very important for us to get another issue out as soon as possible.
And Julian, how do you think this, of course, we know that there's been a huge impact in the print industry, and I'm reading a lot of stories about the main newspapers, you know, the top magazines. But what about in the indie world? Do you think, is it affecting more?
Yes, of course. I think us, you know, I've been talking to other editors who are kind of very similar in terms of structure, like us, you know, that we are sale-based. We need to sell the magazine for us to survive. So we are struggling because most of those things we need to, you know, retails are closed where they sell the magazines. Online stores, for example, sometimes takes longer to ship some magazines. International orders, some countries are not receiving shipments from the UK. You know, so it's a lot of trouble that we're having to put the magazine up there. You know, we wish, for example, that we were not so dependent on sales, which we are thinking now, should we really consider going the advertising side? You know, just trying to, you know, talk to advertisers. Maybe they want to sponsor us for the next issue so we don't have to worry so much on making money by selling our magazine.
And Julian, tell us about, I mean, you've been taking some pictures. I would like to tell us about your side. I know you are also a photographer. How did that work out and how did you feel? Because I know you're kind of conflicted about it.
Yes, I'm trying to be a good citizen. Like, I'm trying to stay at home, you know, follow the rules, walk once a day. But I'm also a freelancer, so I need to get some money to the door. So I've been approached by an American newspaper to take some photos of the emptiness of London for an article that they're working on. And, you know, when I was doing that, I noticed there's a lot of other things that I can photograph, like, you know, people who are in the streets, you know, like homeless people who don't have the privilege to be indoors trying to avoid this, you know, this epidemic. So I tried to photograph last week for 2 days. I tried to photograph as much as I could in those 2 days for, you know, in the morning. And I photographed different people, you know, going to work, different subjects that were very interesting. So I'm trying to make like a little collection of, or document this epidemic through photos.
No, and I saw some of them that you posted on your social media. Some of them, they are quite eerie in a way, because it's, I know some people say, oh, how great, London is empty. I actually don't think that. Actually, I think there's something quite haunting as well, but quite beautiful in your pictures.
It is scary. When I was in Piccadilly, meanwhile, you know, Piccadilly is really close to where I live. So I'm not walking miles to take these pictures. When I was walking through Piccadilly, there was something about hunting, like you said, is something scary because it's so quiet and there's police around doing their job. So you walk in like you don't know what's going to happen to you. Are you going to get arrested because you walk in by yourself or with this camera or someone is coming to, you know, it's just a really weird feeling walking into an empty, very busy area that's Piccadilly, for example. So yeah, it's very strange. And like I said, you know, like I said before, it's really sad to see people that should be home, you know, but they're not, they can't afford to be home, you know, because there are essential workers who help us with their groceries, with our deliveries, with our, you know, with our hospitals and stuff like that. You know, those are people who really work hard and they don't have the privilege to be home at the moment, so.
But the only thing that do make me smile sometimes, I mean, of course, if you have a dog, I see a lot of people doing their daily walks with a dog. I mean, it's so cute. I am seeing actually your dogs from our video chat.
They're always on top of me.
Do they their daily walk?
Yeah, they do. I go very early. I mean, in the park as well, they're very, very strict here in Hyde Park, very strict with dog walking. You need to put your dog in the leash and you're not allowed to let them run, you know, free like they normally do, which is understandable. We need to respect that because there's a lot of people doing the same thing. A lot of people walking their dogs, a lot of parents with their kids in the park. So, you know, even though we're trying to keep ourselves a distance, somehow the park has become very populated with people, which is a little bit scary. So I try to go very early, very like around 6 a.m. when there's no one, just to try to avoid and give the space to people who, you know, for later on, they can just enjoy the park.
That was Julian Victoria from Dog Magazine. Well, that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Nora Hull. If you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monaco.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen to it again on monaco.com or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. And don't forget, if you're stuck indoors at the moment, that Monaco can come to you in print. We have some new subscription offers, which you can also unlock at the website. Before we go, a beautiful song for you. This is Fleetwood Mac with 7 Wonders. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.